We did receive a text question earlier that I meant to cover last break before we forget. Vertical gardening, does it have an application? And for the listener, there's tower gardens you can buy that you can put. They come with little pods that you put your herbs. We see a lot of herbs, a lot of lettuces.
Put your seedlings in on whatever crop,
It has a little pump that comes up on top, and the water trickles down to a basin, and it just recycles.
And I think that kind of farming, obviously for a homeowner or somebody that's going to use that for their own personal consumption, or maybe them and a few friends or family, then that's apropos. It's just the quantities. Again, there's over 4 million people in Greater Maricopa County now, and the concept of feeding that many people, much less the rest of the country, which is kind of what myself and my industry, my colleagues are doing, I think is it take a lot of vertical farming, containers, ocean containers that are being converted into farming units. Again, nothing wrong with that. It's just it's very fresh, obviously, but it's very high cost per pound of production,
and your yield per acre probably isn't 30,000 pounds.
No, you're probably, because they're vertical, you're probably getting your yield per acre. It's just there's not very many acres in a urban setting that you can do that on. So again, I'm not denigrating it. I think it works for some people, but as far as the concept of that feeding large quantities of people, I don't see it.
And about 15% of your harvest is organic, the rest is conventional. What's the difference between organic and conventional?
Sure. Our cultural practices, we can't use commercial fertilizers, so we're using different fertilizers that are derived naturally. I won't go into the description of what they are, but you can imagine animal-based, I'll say that. And then we can't use any insecticides or herbicides. There are some organic insecticides. The chrysanthemum flower has some natural pesticide or bug-killing characteristics. So we use a derivative of a chrysanthemum flower that's as a natural insecticide. Some bacteria, there's some fungal-based materials that work on worms, but it's pretty limited. So those are the big items or areas that differs. The other one is no herbicide. So our herbicide is a hoe. You literally are out there on your knees pulling them out or hoeing them out. So that's why our production costs differ between commodities. But it's at least 35, if not 50 or 60% more per acre to grow organic, and yet we make the same, if not less, units per acre on those different commodities.
And you're saying more expensive, 30 to 50 to 60% more expensive to grow.
To grow per acre and with the same number of units derived or less to put against the growing costs.
And right now it's 15%, but you see growth in organic.
Sure. We wouldn't be very smart if we didn't respond to our consumer, and our consumer is asking for that. We'd always grown conventional carrots, and just here in the last, we're now in the second year, we changed our packing shed and brought in some more organic ground into our stable. So now we're growing organic carrots, and that was at the request of some of our major receivers or retailers.
But you also were saying it's more volatile in terms of why?
There seems to be to us a real hardcore group of organic consumers that they have to have organic, and they'll pay about anything to get it. And so if there's a slight undersupply, then the market really skyrockets. Conversely, if there's a slight oversupply, then I think it spills over, the production spills over into the not as hardcore organic consumers, and then the market gets real soft. We see that. Produce is the kind of, I think, the most perfect example of supply and demand economics that there is. We don't have any storage. I mean, we have to harvest it. We have very small window. We pick it, we pack it. It has to go somewhere because we have to do that again the next day. So we're at the mercy of the supply chain, and that can be good, or it can be bad, like it is now. We're with the really good weather we've had here. We have an abundance of produce, both here, Yuma, Imperial Valley, and the weather back east is terrible. So people are not in the mindset that they want fresh vegetables and salads and whatnot. They're going for the hungry man's soup.
And we're at the mercy of good growers like you, because there's not a lot of people farming today.
No.
And trying to get into farming. So yeah, Russo family, stay in the farming.
We will. As long as we can afford it.
Yes. It isn't easy.
Now, why a carrot? What's the nutritional value of rabbit food?
I told my wife last night, she asked me what I was going to say about it, and I was going to say that I told her I was going to say carrots are sweet as mother's love. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I started growing carrots because that was one of the first opportunities that I found as I got involved in produce growing, to be honest about it. It wasn't any high-minded championing any particular commodity. Carrots are just, they're really good to clean up ground and kind of get it in good shape. Again, we talked earlier about the tilth of the soil and keeping it loose. So carrots make an excellent rotational crop. But they are, you know, you think about the produce aisle, some color on there is always nice. There's lots of pretty green stuff. But then, you know, you have our carrots, and they're the bright orange. The bell peppers that are red or yellow, those become very popular. So I think it's just been a staple commodity for a long time, and I think deservedly so.
What's your favorite thing to way to prepare and eat?
Raw.
Dipped in ranch?
Dipped in ranch, yeah. Exactly.
With a broccoli on the side?
Just like the rest of folks, yeah. I actually like cauliflower better with ranch than broccoli, but yeah.
High in vitamin A.
Right.
And they're sturdy. If I had an opportunity to go through your plant, and it's amazing how effectively you move those carrots and get them ready for myself, the consumer,
right.
And they're sturdy, they're manageable, and you can
good
handle
shelf
them.
Life.
Good shelf life.
Yeah. So no, it's a good commodity, very competitive. We're what I'd call a large grower of carrots, but there's two big companies over in California that grow exponentially more acres than I do, and they're very good at it. So it's tough to compete. We'd never be able to compete nationally. We kind of have to rely on the local or regional market for carrots.
And on Fill Your Plate, there's a multitude of recipes that include Russo carrots. So, and by the way, those recipes are provided by our farmers and ranchers.
FillYourPlate.org. It's a website there. It's on a farm bureau put together full of recipes for consumers, along with a list of farmers market. I was actually saving that for the next break, but why hold out? If you go there and you click on the farmers market, you can sort by zip code, by region. I've got the entire state zoomed out, and I can't even count how many different ones, from Flagstaff down to the south side of Tucson, you can find a local's farmers market.
And it's mobile friendly. So if I'm in Prescott on the weekend and I want to visit the farmers market before I go on my hike, I can just go to fillyourplate.org on my smartphone and I can find the farmers markets that are open. It's kind of fun. And we do that because it's another way for us to promote our farmers and ranchers, because you can also buy directly from some of our farmers. Our two most searched areas are beef and wine, of course. And we've got about 20, 25 beef producers that will sell directly. And then you go into a grocery store on the corner, and you can get your Russo carrots and your leafy greens and have a salad and a steak, and you're set.
You're good. You're making me hungry.
I know. I'm kind of hungry, too. Going down to Dad's this weekend, and we're going to grill some steaks. So we'll get our salad and...
I'm going to put you on the spot now. Where does he get his steak?
Dad get his steak? Well, we just go right into the grocery store, because 53% of our beef in the meat market is coming from our Arizona ranchers. But I have purchased directly, and one of my favorites is Arizona Legacy Beef. They have a Criollo beef. It's a heritage breed that comes from Spain. And not that I am the sophisticated connoisseur of beef, but I have actually fallen in love with that one, and that's on Fill Your Plate, by the way. But all of our beef here in Arizona is good. And I'm not partial on that because we really produce a high quality beef in Arizona. Any of our ranchers, I've been to their ranches and I've seen it for myself, the way they take care of their cattle, their certifications, what they do.
You'll have to bring that Legacy Farms in when we cover beef.
I will.
I can't remember if it's May or June. One of the, whatever National Dairy Month is, we're covering dairy, but that next adjacent month is beef.
I will seek out Danny and Casey Tomerlin because they're the ones that are doing the Criollo beef, and they'll give you all sorts of stories.
I have not heard of
that. Oh, it's so good.
And if he comes, he's got to bring some.
Oh, that's what we'll do. We will do that.
I had to make that a requirement. I was expecting a bag of Russo carrots this morning. The listeners can hear as much.
Sorry, my bad.
Our bad. We didn't have that one in the bag.
We're talking with the Arizona Farm Bureau here at Rosie on The House, the final segment coming up next.